Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. Utilities have traditionally been known for the defense of properties, which makes the combination of robust economic growth, technological excitement, and elevated bond yields seem like an unlikely recipe for their strong performance. That being said, the sector's 23% gain kept pace with the broader market last year. In 2025, this momentum should continue. After two decades of stagnant power demand, the electrification of the US economy and the intense power needs of generative artificial intelligence should prompt demand to inflect higher. Additionally, with our aging grid infrastructure and more frequent extreme weather events, finding enough capacity to provide adequate electricity supply won't be easy. These themes and others should highlight winners across the utility sector. For investors looking to diversify tech exposure, utilities could offer an attractive way to invest in the many themes driving markets today, but with a very different wrapper. To share what she's seeing across the utility sector, Gabriela Santos, my new co-host, will be joined by Teresa Kim, a utilities-focused equity research analyst here at JP Morgan Asset Management. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Over to you, Gabriela.
Thank you so much, David. Teresa, welcome. Give us a little bit of background on how you ended up becoming a research analyst. I'm always fascinated how people ended up with their current jobs, and also why specifically utilities of all sectors.
Well, first, my initial interest was actually government and policy, and I was obsessed with watching C-SPAN in college. So I spent 4 years on the Senate Banking Committee on Washington, D.C., listening to Alan Greenspan talk about the markets, and I was just really interested in how the markets work. And having no experience with investing, I pivot into business school. I came out and I landed my first job on Wall Street, and it was an equity analyst. I wasn't really thinking about utilities at the time, but I just wanted to sort of understand fundamental research. Utilities was actually a very good match because it actually requires understanding of policy. There's so much regulatory developments that is critical to understanding the value of utilities.
That makes total sense. And what's your day-to-day like? Are you down in D.C. to understand policy? What? Give us a little peek.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you my week because I think that would actually describe how it's very dynamic. So actually last week, I spent most of my time looking at California wildfire liability estimates. Earlier this week, I spent 2 days in Florida meeting with a deep bench of management teams of utilities looking at renewable growth. And then I went to Detroit to actually look at the clean energy plan of the Michigan utilities. And this is all at the same time, trying to understand the DeepSeek news, as well as waiting for the Fed to come out with their statement. So I will say there's not a typical day, but it is one that is exciting and one where you're always kind of trying to figure out the impacts.
Yeah. So you're not just sitting there with your model on Excel, plugging in numbers. You're doing a variety of things, including visiting utility plants themselves.
Yes.
What's do you go often? What's a cool story maybe you could share?
Well, funny enough, one of my favorite visits is actually a local visit here in Brooklyn, Greenpoint, Brooklyn. National Grid has these egg digesters. It's a waste treatment facility that would turn food waste into gas. And so you have these structures that are over 100 feet tall. And when I think about waste into energy, I was thinking, okay, I better prepare myself and wear sweatpants and just really prepare for a not so pleasant experience. And when I got there, I was pretty amazed with how, I would say, sophisticated the facility is. And what's interesting is that they actually have a platform above these egg digesters where you have a beautiful view of this Manhattan skyline. And actually, anybody could actually go to the site, and it is so nice that people actually propose there. Uh-huh. So there is love in the land of utility, I would say. But, you know, these site visits are important because it gives us fundamental insight into sort of better view of the range of outcomes, and that goes into our investment style.
Good tip for anyone looking to propose. speaking of the utility sector, and just by your explanation of last week, there are clearly different types of utilities. So just in plain English, how would you explain how you think about the different buckets in the sector?
There are three buckets. The first one is your all of the above. It's a vertically integrated utility. You have generation, you have transmission, you have distribution, you have your retail customers. It's all in one. Then you have what you call independent power producers, and they are focused solely on unregulated power generation. They have power plants that are outside of a regulatory construct. And then you have mostly wires-only companies. These are regulated companies, but they don't produce their own power. They actually buy from others, and what they do is they just move the power to their customers.
Oh, that is such a good description. Mm-hmm. Utilities have been very top of mind recently for investors, not necessarily the usual defensive utility thought, but much more so around the AI theme and the need for power generation. Mm-hmm. Utilities were up 20% in 2024. So what type of utilities within this construct do you see benefiting from this theme?
Well, the most excitement has been in the IPPs, in the independent power producers, where you could probably get the most direct exposure to rising power prices. But when we look at I think more broadly, I would say it's the vertically integrated utilities, the ones that have all across the value chain. Mm-hmm. So they can actually build the generation, build the transmission, just everything across the infrastructure.
And for those vertical utilities, those are regulated.
Yes.
Then. Mm. Interesting. So how do you think about broader electricity demand, right? There's AI, but there's also electrification of everything where we live, where how we move, warmer climate, more manufacturing capacity. So there's a lot going on there. What do you think is needed to fix this potential issue we might have in the future with electricity capacity?
Well, we as an industry, we have not built anything in a very long time. And also even the capability. You know, we haven't built gas plants for a very long time. So we're kind of starting from a standing position. And so what we need is actually regulatory alignment. We need political alignment. We need stakeholder engagement to actually move this forward. As an example, I'll give you the announcement of Entergy, this big announcement that Entergy, a utility in the Southeast, is actually providing over 2 gigawatts of power for Meta. Mm-hmm. And they have basically located in an area of the state where there's actually not much economic development. So they're actually building roads. They are providing training for the area. This is where the governor of Louisiana is all in on making sure the gas plants get built for new power. So you need sort of a collaborative framework that everyone is aligned, and so that if the utility is actually growing a lot, they're not going to be, say, penalized.
And so a lot of it does come down to regulation, which is your background is so helpful. But is it regulation out of D.C. and Congress or the executive branch, or is it more state by state, local?
I would say for power plants, generation, that is really more state and local. When it comes to transmission, I would say that if it is interstate transmission, that's where federal comes into play. But if it is intrastate, that is still very much state and local.
I see. In terms of the potential power challenge and the need to actually build new plants, what do you see as the energy source that can help us most here? Is there one single thing?
It is an all-of-the-above strategy. It really is. I think the initial part are renewables because they're the fastest to market, but we're going to need a lot of new gas plants because with renewables being an intermittent power source, we really need dispatchable generation like gas to make sure that the system is reliable. So we've already seen several utilities with their integrated resource plans, and these are long-term planning. There are a lot of gas plants in the mix. And there's also nuclear, too. You know, we are starting to see what they call uprates, and these are expansions on existing nuclear facilities. We are seeing restarts of decommissioned plants, and that's because now the economics make sense. The power prices have reached to a point where you can actually have a restart. A lot of the nuclear plants that we have that were closed for economic reasons.
It was really interesting to see last year, right? The restart of the Three Mile Island nuclear plant. And there was so much fanfare around nuclear last year as the solution.
Yes.
How feasible is that really? Does it require constructing new nuclear plants and not just restarting old ones?
I think, well, near term, we'll work with what we have. And then longer term, it does take a long time to build a large conventional nuclear power plant. We saw recently it takes about 7 to 10 years for a conventional plant. And now there is a lot of talk about small modular reactors, which are going through the process at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We really haven't seen it being proven out on a scale. We know the technology works. There are many designs out there. But really, going from design to actual application, I think it will probably be in the mid-2030s until we see that.
And one last question. We did talk a lot about regulation, state, some of the federal regulation. What about a hot topic perhaps this year or next year in D.C. around one of the legislative packages that was passed under the Biden administration through Congress, which was the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which contained a lot of provisions related to utilities and power. What does a potential repeal of the IRA mean for your space?
Well, I think first of all, the wholesale repeal of the IRA, I think, is unlikely because there are just so many benefits of that IRA to red states. I would say almost 80% of the capital dollars are going to red states. So I think the approach, what we're thinking about, is more surgical. Really taking a scalpel and making changes. So there are certain tax credits and benefits that will go, right? The EV tax credits is probably low-hanging fruit. We potentially could see an earlier sunsetting of renewable tax credits. So right now in the IRA, it's really 2032. Could they move that up? That is certainly possible. So maybe it moves up to 2027, 2028. I think, though, the manufacturing tax credits, you know, we're seeing a battery belt that's being formed from the Midwest all the way down to the Gulf Coast. That's all Republican states. And those power plants cannot happen without actually renewable production tax credits. So it is a very, I would say, nuanced. It's not so clear cut. So if anything, though, the demand for power is so high, it probably would offset any kind of, say, tax credit uncertainty. Customers are still moving ahead with renewables, regardless.
So it's not that it's going to be the end of capacity generation and construction around renewables at the expense of natural gas.
That's right.
For example, it's going to be a bit of both. And then perhaps further down the line, nuclear can also play a key role.
That's right.
So much excitement in utilities. And I think we'll continue to see a lot of that. Last question we always ask on the podcast, bonus fun round. If listeners out there wanted to understand a little bit more of the utility world or power world or in general investing and being a research analyst, what's one book, one news source, one podcast, one TV show that you'd recommend?
Okay, so two come to mind right away. One is called Utility Dive, and it's a great resource. They put out so many good articles about everything across the spectrum, from technology to policy to even scuttlebutt. So it's a very good place to go. And the other one I would recommend, it's the EPRI Current podcast. Current, I love the play on words.
Oh, I get it.
and EPRI is the Electric Power Research Institute. And this is a nonprofit organization that is actually mostly funded by the government. So you have a team of scientists, I think it's like over 100 scientists and researchers that are solely looking at the technology. So if you want to know more about small modular reactors, they will probably have a podcast. Or if you want to know about reconductoring power lines, they will have a podcast for it.
Yes. It's,
yeah. If you really want to go into the technicals,
uh-huh.
I'm sure a lot of people do.
Exactly. And I will write that down. Yeah. Thank you so much, Teresa, for joining. This has been fascinating. And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in. Please do check out our podcast feed for other episodes we've done with other research analysts around semiconductors, healthcare, industrials. There's lots more to check out. Thank you.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed J.P. Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.